Fighters, today I'm excited to welcome back to the show. I believe it is our first three-peat guest, Mike Michalowicz. He is an amazing author who's on a mission to eradicate entrepreneurial poverty. He was actually episode number two of the podcast, and I think we're closing in on about 800 episodes right now. So we've known Mike for a long time, appreciated his wisdom, and I'm excited to have a conversation with him here today about how you could be a better business owner. And also, we talk a little bit about what's coming at our Strong Leader Live event in Florida at the end of April. So you're going to want to make sure to check that out as well. So without further ado, here's Mike. Mike Michalowicz, what's going on, man?
Oh, man, life is good is what's going on, Tom. It's good to be with you.
It's good to have you back. This is your third time on the show.
Three-peat, baby.
Three-peat, the only three-peat. And I'm looking right now, because we just had an episode drop today. I think it was this morning. Our episode 747 dropped today. And you were number two.
Was I really?
You were literally my second one. If you go back and I leave them up because I want people to know there's hope when they suck at something. And yeah. And you could hear me. I'm like, hi, hey, Mike. You know, it's totally insecure.
Yeah, right,
like
right, this crazy right,
thing. Right. It's the second podcast I ever did. I didn't know what I was doing. And sometimes I still feel that way. But anyway, it's great to have you back, man. Tell some people a little bit about you that might not know who Mike Michalowicz is. If you don't know, oh, wait, quick story. I squirrel out a lot. I'm at our daughter's ballet studio. I'm making a donation for this event the other night. My wife and I are in there, and I make this donation, and I'm sitting there with the director of the ballet studio, and there's a bookshelf. And I look over her shoulder, and Profit First is sitting there. And I go, we get done with the meeting. We get up, leave. I said, hey, got a quick question. I said, have you read Profit First? She's like, this is my Bible. She's like, this is the greatest blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, he's been on my show twice, coming on again, doing our event. She's like, you know, Mike, oh my God, that's amazing. So dude, it's so cool.
Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. It's so cool. Cause I know how hard you work to not only write good stuff, but to get it out there, and you're all over the place. So for the four or five people in the world who, don't know who are you?
Yeah. So the 4 or 5 billion times two people who don't know me, I'm an author, small business author, and write books with the intent of eradicating entrepreneurial poverty. That's my life's purpose. So I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, and live the life of desiring to be financially free, personally free, but not experiencing that. And that gap between the reality, working our butts off, not making any money, and what we see, that gap I call entrepreneurial poverty. And I faced it too long. I said, I'm going to resolve this for myself. But anyone I have the privilege and come in contact with, I'm going to do the same for them. So that's what I do. I write books to resolve that.
I love that. I love that. And guys, I'm going to talk about some things here with Mike. If you want to know more of Mike's story, go back to episode two. And Mike was great. I wasn't, but that's okay, because it's not a, you know, we're all good there. I'm having fun. But so you've been in the entrepreneurship game for quite a while. I want to start with this. What if you could wave a magic wand over entrepreneurship and tomorrow morning you wake up and something's different, better, changed, gone, present, would that look like?
I think the biggest change I would make is inspire entrepreneurs not to go into business for the money, but to go into business for the purpose, because that's where the money is. I'm a big believer everyone should be wealthy. Everyone should achieve a lifestyle that they desire for themselves. And wealth is a means to get there. But when we start by saying, I'm going to do what makes money, many business owners go into a business that they see a financial opportunity, but it's not joyful for them. So they don't have the stick-to-itness. Mm-hmm. And now they're in the slog for a year or two and they're not making the income they desired and they abandon it. Well, most overnight successes take 10 or 15 years. But if you are passionate, if you really resonate with what you're doing and the money is secondary to it, we all have to survive.
Yeah.
But if the money's secondary to it, you're going to have to stick-to-itness. And that's when I found usually the wealth pours in.
Do you have to be passionate about the thing to be successful in business? Like, the actual industry.
No, dumb luck's a factor too. I know some people that have crushed it, and I'm like, they were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And so yeah, dumb luck can happen. But I think to bet on the lottery is a bad move. I think it definitely ups your odds. Because sadly, I've seen the reverse. I've seen people so passionate about what they do, have so much purpose in it, and not make a penny either. So It doesn't guarantee success. I think it just ups the odds. I'll tell you another thing that I wish every entrepreneur did is surround yourself with peers. People are going through the same experience. Some that are ahead of you in some ways, some that are behind you in other ways, but a collective of non-competing businesses, because we don't want to withhold anything, of complementary businesses, business owners, who are all pushing forward. And now instead of just one mind, your own mind working on a problem, now you have 8 or 10 minds working on challenges that you face, but they don't have the emotion connected with it and can be much more logical about your approach. So I've been in a mastermind, a peer group, of different ones, but over the last 25 years or so, I've been doing it. And it's been a game changer. I can't say specifically this is why I've had the success I've had, but I know in my darkest periods, those are the people I went to and they helped me navigate through it. They gave me comfort in just knowing that there is a path forward.
Well, you have somebody else who's probably been there and they can tell, I always talk about, they have the flashlight out of the dark room, right? Like they know the way out, and they're there sometimes just to go, hey, dude, this sucks in the moment, but I promise you on the other end of this, you know, there's a better business, a better life. There's hope.
I remember the first time we go through something, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. I remember Walter Payton, someone interviewed him who was passing away. He had I think it was cancer. And someone said, are you scared of dying? He said, yeah, I've never done this before.
Oh God. Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like fear is triggered in a big part by the unknown. And so the first time you do anything in a business, the first time you lose an employee, the first time a client leaves you, the first whatever, the fact that other people have been through it, to your point, Tom, it's reassuring that there's a path forward.
This wasn't planned this way, but today, like I jumped from one call to this interview here today in what I guess you'd call our mastermind group. And the topic today, we start every month with a kind of a mindset topic, you know, just, you know, work on, you know, your brain a little, right? And the title of the call was, and so I'm going to ask you this question because I had my take and my wingman on the call, Chris, he had his take and we kind of coached some people through some things. But the topic of the call was, what do I do when I feel like I'm not winning?
Mm.
And because we're seeing some things in the group, we work with contractors and a lot of times it's seasonal and it's, you know, it's end of February or beginning of March right now. And depending on where you live, you come out of the dark winter, the phone hasn't been ringing a lot and it's easy to kind of, you feel like you're creating content, they're prospecting, you're doing these things, but they're not seeing the needle move as much. And I'm just curious what your take is for an entrepreneur who feels like they're doing the right things and they don't feel like they're winning.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what I do because that's normal. We all go through these ups and downs. The one thing I do that helps navigate tough periods is I journal. And I remember a friend of mine, when I was going through a dark period in my business, he goes, oh, do you journal? I'm like, I don't even know what that is. He's like, it's a diary. We just call it a journal so you feel a little more manly about it. I was like, oh, okay. So it's a diary. And I said, well, what do you write in that? Like, do you write like, I'll be successful as an affirmation thing? He goes, no. He goes, write down whatever you feel in the moment, whatever's on your mind, just let it out. It's the cheapest form of therapy. And I wrote angry thoughts. I was angry at God because my business was struggling because I was struggling. I was angry at other people. I was finger pointing. I was so angry at myself. But just writing it, what was interesting, Tom, and I still have it, I still use it occasionally, is I felt relief sometimes for about 5 minutes, sometimes a few hours, sometimes a few days. And during that relief, I had clarity again. But if I stuck in the I'm not winning phase, it was so overwhelming emotionally, it would actually immobilize me. I wouldn't take actions to move my business forward. But once I had that clarity, I would get to work, make a little progress, I'd get in that non-winning state again, and I'd just start journaling, and it would free me up again. So it's a cool little tool.
Do you still journal or do you only do it when you're in the dumps?
I do, but I do it mostly when I'm in the dumps.
Okay.
Actually, I meditate daily.
Okay.
And I do also what's called meta meditation, and including transcendental. But nonetheless, that has been very powerful in just, for at least for me, defining that winning is simply a definition of how joyful and comfortable I am with what I'm doing. And I can put a lot of measurements around it, but I also found that some of those measurements are changing. Like I used to be like, oh, am I the most successful person in my social circle? Well, if I'm not, I'm losing. But I found that I'll never be that person. You know, any person on this planet has a 1 in 7.5 billion chance of being the richest human on the planet. Like the odds are way better to really bet on the lottery. So I found there's some comparisons I was taking that I could never win. So I'd always feel icky about myself. When I've started to remove that and make it more of this kind of inward looking, compete with myself, make my own new PRs, personal records for myself.
Yeah.
That is a better way to measure progress, I found.
And there's so much crossover what's been going on in our group with the things that you're saying right now. How do you define winning?
Yeah. So winning now is about contribution. Winning then was about competition. And I can't say there's a specific date it transferred over. And I can't say I'm 100% about contribution. There are times I look, I'm like, oh, that author is so much more successful than me. Damn it. And I want to crush them. You know, that ego still kicks in.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, like, no one on this planet is going to say, oh, Mike was a better or more popular author than whomever. That will never happen. The only thing that's going to happen is when I leave this planet, some people hopefully will say, that dude helped change my life.
Yeah.
He contributed. There's a saying that, and I can't remember who attributed to, but they said, when we leave this planet, it won't be if we were successful. The question will be, did we matter? And I've been really focusing on that. Is what I'm doing matters? And if it does, to me, that is winning, regardless of all the other, you know, measurable components.
Fighters, join me and Mike Michalowicz at the end of April in Florida at our Strong Leader Live event. If you grab your tickets before March 10th, you can take advantage of the early bird pricing. So go to thecontractorfight.com/strong, get signed up, and we'll see you there. I'm out.
Well, and you know, your definition of winning now versus many years ago, I remember my definition of winning was, I just want to be able to feed my family. Right.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I vividly remember saying, if I could just make $3,500 a month,
yeah, yeah.
I had a new baby, and that was the number, you know?
Yeah.
And that kind of goes with your book, Fix This Next, right? That there's the hierarchy of business needs, right? If we're talking business and entrepreneurship, and a lot of times people are paralyzed because they don't know what to work on, and they're trying to address another need that they're not ready to address, and then they're feeling
crap. It's too early.
They feel like they're not winning.
It's funny, Tom. I just came off a call with someone I was talking with, and we were talking about the difference between the survival stage of a business or just life and the thriving stage. And I don't know what the number is, but there's a certain point where our income is too low to even worry about, am I thriving? You know, can I land more clients? It's all about survival, putting food on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're in that state, I think we need to change our behavior to just get back to providing enough. And they are two distinct phases. I also think it's impossible when we're in the survival stage to execute on anything that would move our business forward in a big way. We have to get the food on the table. So you're right. There's stages. I think the mistake I've made in the past is thinking it's a ladder, that once I get past survival, I'll never have to worry about that again.
Right.
Now
right.
I'm up to a thriving level. And once I get there, I'll just keep climbing. No. You go down, up and down rungs. It's like that dumb whack-a-mole game. Like you think your problem's gone until it pops up again in your face the next day. So it's quite normal, not easy, but it's quite normal for us to go up and then go back down and go up and go back down again.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm even close to being remotely accurate in what I'm about to say, but worked with thousands of people through the years in our groups and stuff like that. And I see so many people, and maybe this is just because I'm wired. Are you familiar with a DISC profile?
Yeah,
DISC. Okay, I'm a high D, high I. My detail-oriented S and C and all that stuff is so small, you need a telescope to see the number, right? Like it's crazy. So it might be some of my wiring, but I feel so many young businesses, they read books that talk about it's all about systems. And I'm like, no, it's all about scoring points. Like you're just focused. Like, I get it. I understand that there's always a system for everything, right? You have a sales system, a marketing system. Okay. So I'm not saying they're not important, but I see so many entrepreneurs, business owners get so paralyzed and bogged down in creating these systems that they think are going to be the answer, when their focus really needs to be on opening your mouth, shaking hands, and trying to score points every day.
Yeah. You're right. They're right. They're trying to live into that bigger business. It was funny. There's a very popular book out there on systematizing businesses. I'm good friends with the author. It's a fantastic read. And it was designed for companies that are really doing minimally $5 million, but probably $10 million in revenue. Well, a lot of entrepreneurs that are doing, you know, startup businesses, $250,000, $500,000 in revenue, are reading this book, trying to implement it. And they're like, I don't know, I got to do more and I need more people. And we're artificially building a system that our business inherently can't support yet. It is about kissing babies and shaking hands. Like, you got to play that political game to get that exposure. And we're doing things way too early. Another thing that kind of frustrates me, but I have the propensity to do the same thing, is, why is Jeff Bezos successful? Why is, you know, Sarah Blakely so successful? And I love these people that are now doing billions of dollars of revenue in their business, and I try to emulate what they're doing at a billion, instead of saying, what did Jeff Bezos do when he was in a garage? Like, I don't focus on their past history. I focus on their current history, and then believe that executing what they're doing now will serve me now. But I'm in their then state, so I need to look back. So we can go ahead way too fast, and then we get frustrated that we get stuck.
Yeah, I get asked all the time, you know, Tom, how do I create systems? And I go, sell more and be profitable and pay somebody who's good at systems. That's my solution to systems.
That's pretty true. Yeah.
So I want to talk about our event coming up in a minute, but one more thing. Yeah. What percentage of struggle with entrepreneurs do you feel is due to friendly fire?
Meaning they're hurting their own business. Yeah.
You know,
I would say it depends on the size of the business. So in an early stage business where it's just the entrepreneur, maybe one colleague or something, the fact that they're firing anything is awesome and it actually helps the business. Like, at least they're shooting all over the place. But as the business gets a little bit bigger, where you start having a team, maybe it's virtual help or whatever, that's when we start dropping these grenades that kind of blow things up. And we don't even realize it. We're like, hey, here's the direction we want to go in. And we have this great idea, expecting others to execute on it, but they were supposed to do the last idea we had, and we start spinning the business around. So as a business grows, there's more friendly fire. I find, and these are very subjective, but that $1 million threshold for a lot of small businesses becomes this kind of glass ceiling. They can't get past it. Well, who the impedance is usually the entrepreneur at that point. Yeah. They become a distraction as opposed to a compliment to the business. And I don't know how much percentage-wise it is, but that's the danger.
You know, I thought an author of your magnitude would know the exact percentage. Right? So
it's 38%. Okay, I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to be so public about it. 38.2%.
Did you know that 67.6% of statistics are made up on the fly?
Right, so, on the anyway, spot.
All right, here's a fun one. Pretend God came down tonight to you, showed up in your bedroom, said, hey, dude, you're done with the books. No more writing. This business has to go away. You got to start a new one tomorrow.
New business.
Yeah. What would you do?
I would become I would enter into some metaphysical thing. I'd say, hey, I've met God and she told me to start a new business. I have a direct connection with God. And people are like, are you serious, Mike? Yeah, I got proof. So listen, the point is I'm very opportunistic.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many people will get a one-on-one meeting with God like that. I know we do it through prayer and so forth, but you know, this was a good meeting. So I think I would leverage that. It's good marketing, if nothing else.
That's great. That's such a great answer. Like, hey, this is an opportunity. Let's capitalize on that. I would ask that because from time to time, I'll be like, if I had to do something different, what would I do? And I just for fun, no real agenda to the question. I was just curious. So we're going to be hanging out April 24th, 20 through the 26th down in Florida, April 2023 at our Strong Leader Live workshop. Yeah. And you're the man. You're running the workshop, man. And I'm introing you, and then I'm walking off and taking notes.
We're gonna have a blast.
Yeah, we're gonna have a great time. A lot of cool stuff going on down there. What? Why would a contractor listening to this need to get there? What are they gonna leave with at the end of your workshop?
They're gonna walk away with very specific tools that will have immediate impact. And what we're going to commit to doing is picking the one. I think a lot of conferences, we get overwhelmed with stuff and it's amazing stuff, but then we don't know what action to take. So I'm going to show a tool to help you identify the tool to use of the tools and sequence stuff so you can do it in order. I also, and maybe we'll start off the workshop this way, I want to show everyone that we can achieve results that we can't even imagine to be true by using the right tool at the right time. So there was a demonstration. I did this a while ago and it was mind-blowing. And I'm not going to reveal what it is.
Yeah.
But in that moment, prove to people that they can do something that they think they could never do, that's impossible. Maybe we'll kick off the workshop that way by showing this one tool. Really to be demonstrative of, and it's an applicable tool to business and speaking and all different outlets. But then to show that if we just find the right one thing, it can have a dramatic effect on our business. And that's what we're going to work through. We'll do some hot seats. We'll bring some people up. We'll get real about our businesses and we'll move everyone forward. And the last thought I have on this is, you know, there's a looming recession. Who knows what's going on with the economy? It always collapses. So it's happening. It's playing out longer than I thought. But it seems to be happening. I believe that, as Walt Disney famously once said, he said, "I heard there's a recession. I've chosen not to participate."
Yep.
I believe as small business owners, we can choose not to participate. So we're going to also investigate that of what does that mean? How can you not participate? And how can even a recessive period like this be perhaps the biggest opportunity ever for your business's growth?
I love that because there's going to be, you know, like you said, people go to conferences or workshops or whatever, and speakers come up and this is one of the things I hate about them is there's all these different topics. You blast everyone's face off. They got all these notes and handouts or whatever they might have. And then they got to make sense and they feel like they're all equally important right now.
I
got to go home and I got to do it all. So I love how they're going to walk out being able to put the crosshairs on exactly, you know, what the best next move is for them specifically.
It's going to be marching orders, left, right, left. Like, we're going to know what to do when in sequence so we see tangible results.
That's awesome. What else does the fight community need to know before we get out of here, man? You got the last word.
I'll leave it with this note, is that your clients want you to be wildly profitable, very profitable, but there's a contingency here. Your clients will never say, "Can you charge me more?
Yeah.
Could you rip me off a little?" They'll never say, "Hey, can you jack the prices? I wish I was paying you more." But you will hear customers say, "When you provide your services, when I get your products, I want your undivided attention. I want your full effort. I want to be considered your number one customer when you're taking care of me. I want to matter most." Every customer wants that. And the truth is, the only way for our clients to matter most, to give them our undivided attention, is if we're not worrying about money. If we are sustainably profitable, if we have cash reserves, then we can give our full undivided attention. So your clients are saying to you indirectly, they want you to be wildly profitable. So we have to behave that way because it's the only way we can care for our community of customers.
That's gold. That is gold. I appreciate that. Mike, if somebody wants to check out your books and other things you have going on, where do you want them to go?
Oh, come to the event, first of all.
There you go.
That's where you learn more. But if you want to go to my website, it's Mike Motorbike, as in motorcycle. Go to MikeMotorbike.com. It's a nickname from grade school. And I have all my books there, free chapter downloads. I used to write for the Wall Street Journal. I have a podcast at MikeMotorbike.com.
I'm surprised you didn't call it MikeMakalowicz.com and force everyone to figure out how to spell it. So
I do have that.
Yeah.
And I tried and no one could figure out how to spell it. So, and then plus if you go to MikeMotorbike.com, there's a little goose egg and a little golden goose egg right in the beginning. You can see the hog I'm riding.
All right, man. I look forward to checking that out. Guys, hit the show notes. Head to thecontractorfight.com/SLL. Strong Leader Live is what it stands for. Come hang with me, Mike, the rest of the fight team, some really cool people. I guarantee you, you're going to walk out of there equipped to kick some serious tail. So,
yes, sir.
Mike, appreciate you, buddy.
Appreciate you, brother.
All right. Guys, rate us, review it, share it, all that good stuff. We will catch you guys next time on The Fight.